call the Rules Committee together. There was two bills noticed, but today we're only going to take up House Bill 297, which is an act relating to veterinary practices. And we have a new version, which is the V version. So, Mr. Majority Leader, would you make a motion to adopt that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the committee adopt the CS for House Bill 297-25-LS0357 /V as in Victor Bullard as our working document.
Okay, thank you. And so that'll be the version that we work off of. We have Representative Newman here, who's going to come and explain to us the version. And before we get started on this, Representative Newman, it's been, I noticed this as a way to have you explain the changes, and it was not my intention to take public testimony, but if there are questions, I'm going to allow the committee to ask questions of you and those who may have knowledge of this particular bill. And so I'll try to keep it as concise as we can. We are under a time constraint, so I'm sorry for being a little bit late because of that, but Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Staff, or Mr. Chair. Representative Mark Newman, District 15. And Mr. Chair, I have Beth Snyder. Staff of mine has been working very hard on this. Could probably go through this faster than I could if you would like, or else if you want me to do it.
What I'd like for you to do, number one, give me an overview of the bill and explain the changes that bring us to this version.
You want me to do that?
Yes, please.
Mr. Chairman, this bill was brought to me by the Alaska Board of Veterinary Examiners and the Department of Commerce. Asked me to carry this legislation. It does several things. It has an issuance of student permits to allow students to work in the state of Alaska, fourth-year veterinary students in the state of Alaska. You can only have two students per veterinary office, and they have to be directly supervised. We do have some.
Here's the changes, if you want to go through. They're highlighted in pink, the changes from labor and commerce to this version.
Okay. We have a lot of it also, too, Mr. Chair, is house cleaning. It's been since 1998, since the Board of Vets have brought their information in line with current statute, so we did that. It does take out one of their issues that they've been working on for the last 10 years. I guess that would be in Section 7. Talk for compensation, and that's probably been the most discussed part of this bill. And it has to do with their concern that people may be practicing veterinary medicine in the state of Alaska without the public's assurances that they are a veterinarian. Again, it's we can go into that a little bit further down the line. Oh, it also talks about, it changes the word program from school. There's foreign countries that have veterinary programs or schools. This changes it to program. It allows the State Board of State Board of Veterinary Medicine to approve of a veterinarian license in the state of Alaska. It also has to be approved by the Alaska Veterinary Commission. American Veterinary Medical Association. There is some changes that have been made along the way. Now these are some of the changes.
Representative Newman, if you want to go ahead and have your staff run down through those changes, that's okay too. I know that she's been working very diligently on this. And then what I'll do, as soon as we get done with that, I'll open it to questions, because I think that'll point us right square to the issues that you need to deal with.
The changes that I'll go over are the ones that have been changed since it was initially addressed. And the first change, of course, is the Good Samaritan. That was a concern. There are some people that are afraid that people would still be considered practicing veterinary medicine. And wanted to make certain that everybody knew that a friend, a neighbor, someone that helped you if you asked for help, someone that helped an animal alongside the road, communities that have no veterinary close, no veterinarian nearby, those people would be considered safe or not practicing veterinary medicine because of this Good Samaritan clause. So that was changed to read a person who provides, and we took out emergency because that was a concern, provides care without payment or remuneration to an injured or ill animal that reasonably appears to the person to be in need of aid. And prior it said immediate need of aid to avoid serious harm or death. So that took it out for someone that pulled out porcupine quills, and maybe that wasn't considered an emergency, so that protected that person that did that.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Samuels.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that, and I'm sorry I'm not as prepared on this bill as I should be, that alleviate the concerns that on these letters from Skagway.
Through the chair, Representative Samuels, that is absolutely correct.
Thank you.
The next one is a change that removed a holder of a student permit under AS0898188. That was a drafting issue. It's just a redundancy that the drafter noticed, took it out. There's a new exception that was added in Labor and Commerce. It's a person approved by the Department of Health and Social Services to administer rabies vaccines to animals, because when we pulled out for compensation, these people are not paid, but they're in these remote areas up north where there's a lot of dog teams, a lot of rabies. These people give these vaccinations, which rabies is only allowed in the hands of veterinarians, and so this allows these lay vaccinators to have that rabies vaccine and to give these rabies vaccinations. So that protects the...
Make sure you mention the page and the line.
Okay, and I'm sorry, I'm on page 3, and it's line 12 and 13. That is the newest, the new exception to the exceptions.
Is that it?
And then on that same page, line 14, there was a drafting issue, and it said a person or employee of a person who without compensation treats only animals. We've inserted with or without to cover whether that person is paid or whether they're a volunteer. It takes care of what they considered a drafting issue. The next issue was also a drafting issue. It's on page 4. It's lines 15 and 16. And inserted for the student permits was a person holding a permit under this section is not subject to provisions of this chapter other than the section. Again, drafting issue that was brought up, and we just didn't put it in this version. The next major change is on page 5, and this was in response to a concern that if a person was an artificial inseminator, practice that by checking for pregnancy, they would be considered doing veterinary medicine. So we have put back in, we had taken it out, we have put back in on line 20, standard practices commonly performed on farm or domestic animals in the course of routine farming or animal husbandry, so that person will be covered. And the last addition and change in this bill was section 9, which was a drafting issue, and it's a transition. It covers students entering an externship program after the effective date of the bill to be required to have a student permit. And section B, and students enrolled in an existing school at the time of the effective date will be held harmless for the degree program in which they are in.
Representative Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of questions. I appreciate those comments, sir. On page 5, in that last section there that you just talked about, starting with line 20, where it says standard practices commonly performed on farm or domestic animals in the course of routine farming or animal husbandry. Do you have a definition for husbandry, animal husbandry? I mean, is there a definition? I mean, I don't see it in the definition, in the amended definition section here. I'm just trying to, I think that folks who deal with this kind of stuff want to have a pretty clear idea of what animal husbandry means.
It is not in there, through the chair. That is not in there. That was something that the staff member from Rules looked into today and got the information, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the exact reason, but if she could address that.
In fact, I can have Reneva, my chief of staff, go ahead and answer that question. So why don't you pull up a chair, Reneva?
For the record, Reneva Moss, staff, Representative Coghill. Through the chair, Representative Harris, I talked to our legal department today and sent a draft of some language for a definition. He said that he felt that would be a mistake, that it would restrict animal husbandry, because animal husbandry has been practiced since pre-scientific procedures, and he would suggest that you leave the broad historic definition of animal husbandry and not try to use restricted language that's in the dictionary or in other statutes in other states.
Okay. I'll get back to that in just a minute, Mr. Chairman. If I could go to page four, section 7, line 23, in the practice of veterinary medicine. In paragraph I, where it starts off with diagnose, treat, and correct, and whatever, and then it goes down the second line where it says, or other physical or mental condition. Can you explain to me what you mean by mental condition?
Through the chair. I don't know, because I'm not a veterinarian, but we do have a couple of veterinarians available to answer those specifics.
I'm just wondering, if I can, Mr. Chairman. I'm just wondering if training a dog, for instance, which you're trying to obviously affect their mental condition by having them be conditioned to go fetch and bring something back and whatever, is that covered under mental condition?
Through the chair, Representative Harris, I think if you wanted to train a dog, that's not practicing veterinary medicine.
That is not.
That would not be practicing veterinary medicine, in my opinion. We've got the chair of the State Board of Veterinary Medicine here, and he might be able to answer that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Newman, I just want it, because if I read this right, under it's meant to read practice of veterinary medicine, and A means to diagnose that or mental condition. I'm just wondering where it says training a dog or training an animal to do certain things when you're trying to affect their mental state, where it says that, or where that interpretation would come in.
To the chair, Representative Harris, I'm not a dog psychologist. Or
Representative Harris, would you like to have us go ahead and have
that'd be fine.
We have somebody who are the, I suppose the Board of Veterinary Examiners would probably be the person we'd want here. So is it Stephen Torrance?
Mr. Chairman, all I'm trying to do is I'm trying to make sure that folks who do that don't get themselves in trouble with the law.
Totally agree. We want to nail this thing down. So,
all right, Dr. Steve Torrance, Juneau, Alaska. Through the chair, the board has no interest in really having anything to do with the training of animals. We consider that to be an ordinary and common part of having an animal, the fact of responsibility of owning an animal. Where mental illness would be a problem would be with the diagnosis of mental disease, such as obsessive compulsive disorder, to name one, certain hormonally produced mental diseases that occur in cats and dogs and the like. And from the top of my head, there are many others, but those are the sorts of things we're talking about, things with consequence, not training. As well, there are, to the best of my knowledge, no behavioral specialists, veterinary behaviorists in Alaska. But generally, training problems are referred. If they come up in discussion in a vet office, they're generally referred, at least in my experience, out to local trainers if it's a training issue.
Just as a matter of context, what we're talking about is things that will come before the board and that you'll have to make decisions on who is or who is not practicing veterinary medicine.
Someone who is training their animal would not come before the board for practicing veterinary medicine.
I think I just want to make sure that people keep that in context here. Representative Kirkula, you have a question?
Well, I guess I have a comment. because I really respect your profession, and having grown up on a farm and grown up around a lot of veterinarians, and thank you for your work, sir. But when it says mental condition, I mean, I don't I think you couldn't argue that when you do train a dog, you do affect its mental condition. And so when I read that language, I have the same exact concern that the speaker does, that unfortunately the language is too broad there. What you're saying makes sense to me, that if you're saying it's diagnosis of a serious mental illness for the animal or something like that, maybe there's a way to write it. But this, I mean, when you're training a dog, you're going to change its mental being. Am I not right?
Just state for the record so that we can keep those who have to record this in line.
Through the chair, training of an animal, I guess, could be seen as similar to educating a human being. When we're educating or training, we are not altering a medical mental condition, and that is where the difference would lie to me.
And Steve, I'm just going to say it again because we have these folks here typing. When we have a dialogue like that, they have to record every sentence. So that was Steve Torrance. So, Representative Curtula.
Is there a different way to say that where it could be more clear that it's definitely not inclusive of training? Because I just see the argument here with a mental condition for an animal.
Dr. Torrance, through the chair, there probably is. I'm not an attorney. The state, as we've had people who know a lot more about, law and writing these things than I do. We try to put the ideas forth as best we can and then run them through the channels. It's been through the channels several times at least. So I'm probably not the best one to come up with a way to say that.
Representative Newman, you have a point on this?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just as the carrier of this bill, sponsor of this bill, it is the sponsor's intent to not have training a dog, which would be, I think, I would expect you to train your dog. Animal, day-to-day actions that you would, occurrences you'd have with your dog, which would include training, would not fall under mental conditions or trying to diagnose a mental condition within an animal.
Thank you, Representative Newman. And, We travel in two worlds here, one in how to keep it properly lawful or legal, and then secondly, how it works practically. And I think practically we don't have a problem with it, but what we're trying to figure out is how do we do that legal. And Representative Curtula, maybe just a thought, because sub A on line 25 means kind of exclusively means, right? When you say means, those other things become exclusive. Does it always have to be that exclusive? And that's the question, is could it be includes, or is that too loose? And so those are the kind of questions that we have to ask when we're trying to define what veterinary medicine really means.
Could I ask one more question of the doctor before he leaves? Thank you. A second concern I've got in this same section, where it's dealing with what the practice actually is, it talks on line 29 about using a therapeutic substance. I know trainers that use, massage substances on their animals, and again, there's a word that seems really broad to me because it just says therapeutic rather than. Could you tell me what you're getting at with this language? What you intend to try to prohibit or to limit to the practice?
Okay, Steve Torrance. Representative Curtula, through the chair, the practice of medicine comes in when you make a claim for a cure or a treatment. The massaging of an animal, as long as it's not done under the guise of providing a cure or treatment, is different than offering a treatment or a cure.
Before we go further down that road, Representative Johnson's been waiting to chime in, so and then we can go back down that road
again. No, I just would like to get as much help clarifying it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think my question was answered under the exemptions. I was wondering about someone treating their own animal. And then I read number 9 on page 3 where it said a person or employee of a person. And what I'm wondering is I have someone that takes care of my dog and they actually administer medication. So that's not the person who owns it or my employee. That would not be exempt, and therefore, and they would not be allowed to administer that medicine if I read this correctly. Is that correct?
Dr. Torrance, through the chair, I don't think so. If you ask someone to give your dog a medicine, then that is your prerogative, your request, and you would be exempt, and that person would be exempt from practicing medicine.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that's your testimony, but that's not what this bill says. This bill says a person or employee of a person who, with or without compensation, treats any animal belonging to that person. Not me, not my employee, someone else. They're not, page 3, lines 14 is where the exemption is that I'm looking at. That would, in the way I read that, would not allow a friend of mine taking care of my dog to administer, if it was a worming medicine, anything that would not allow someone taking care of my dog or a kennel even. That if I took my dog to a kennel and said this is the medicine this dog needs to take with its food, that would, I understand your testimony, but that's not what this bill says. And that concerns me because I do that on a fairly regular basis and I would hate to get my friend in trouble.
Especially for those who have to be displaced several months out of the year.
Absolutely. I need my friend.
Representative Newman, you had a report.
Under that exemption, on page 2, line 25, a person who provides care without remuneration to an injured or ill animal that reasonably appears to be in need.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, my dog is not injured, and it is a regular, my dog basically has arthritis and takes regular medicine. It's not injured and not in need of aid or any kind of emergency situation. It's just like I take blood pressure medication. I have to take it every day, and so does my dog. And I probably take my blood pressure medicine because of my dog sometimes. But to me, this does not allow for someone who I've entrusted to come to my house even and feed my dog, grind up a pill, put it in the bowl, and according to the way I read this, that's a violation of the law. And if I'm reading it wrong, I'd certainly like to be correct.
If I may?
Yes, sir, Mr. Torrance.
Dr. Torrance, through the chair, page 3, line 14, a person or employee of a person who, with or without compensation, treats only animals belonging to that person, unless ownership is transferred for the purpose of avoiding this chapter, or unless the primary purpose of hiring the employee is to avoid application of this chapter.
Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Yeah, Representative
Johnson. I'm certainly not going to give my dog to someone else so they can treat him. And that still doesn't answer the question. It still does not allow for me to take my dog, which I will remain in possession of, and have someone either come to my house or a kennel or someone else administer medications to my dog without violation of what I've seen. If you read it again, I don't read it that way. I see this as being, I'm transferring ownership. And I'm not. I would have to transfer ownership to qualify under that exemption. I'm certainly not going to give my dog up and have him give it back to me while I'm in June.
You would lose the exemption. It's kind of the negative of the negative. The exemption is that you get to have you or an employee do it unless you try to avoid this exemption by transferring ownership. So that's the problem. What it does, it kicks you out of the exemption and puts you back under the rules.
Right.
And so that would be the way I understand it. Is that true, Doctor?
I'm sorry. I was...
Okay. That's all right. I think we got that squared away.
I think we're coming up with a fix.
But I think... You can see that what we're concerned about, and the reason I wanted to go ahead and have this hearing, is that we're interested in making sure that the veterinary people in Alaska have good rules to operate by, but that people who end up having to take care of their own animals aren't penalized for it.
If I may, Dr. Torrance, through the chair, the board originally had the word agent in there, and I believe it was this, I'm not sure how it got changed, but maybe going through legal. And to me, the word agent works better to define just about anyone. Rather than say an employee, whether paid or not.
So that's a possible amendment we could take up.
Mr. Chairman, I think that might do it.
Yes. Other questions on the bill before we go to that?
I do have a few other questions on the bill. Today in the letter from Skagway, it mentioned a Good Samaritan clause in Section 3, maybe not covering routine care of healthy animals, and that's something that I was picking up in Representative Johnson's question about the injured or ill animal, and I guess I do have that question. How are we exempting people who care for healthy animals in this?
Why don't you pull the mic around before and then identify yourself.
This is Beth Schneider, staff to Representative Newman. I spoke at length with the officer from Skagway. Because there is no veterinary service there, he is covered under the Good Samaritan. And in speaking with him, what he covered were just really traumatic emergency ill issues. And there is no problem with him pulling out porcupine quills, which some would consider an emergency, some would not. Because there is no care there, he is covered under the Good Samaritan, and that was one of the main provisions of this. Another issue that came up when we were talking with him is the, like you said, routine. We found out that he's not a lay vaccinator. That's something that we're going to work with DHSS and see if we can't get that.
Okay, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Along those same lines, I want a hypothetical. I am driving along, and in front of me, someone runs over a moose. This moose is clearly broken legs in a bad way, and I take out the sidearm that I carry with me most of the time, and I put that animal down for humanitarian purposes. I don't think I'm covered under this. I think I violated the law.
Mr. Torrance.
This is Dr. Torrance through the chair. It's something I've thought about before, too, and my understanding is that the board really doesn't have anything to say about that. That is an issue between the individual and fish and game. And my understanding is that there might be ramifications with fish and game. It's something that's...
And Mr. Torrance, though, that same scenario
exactly.
With a horse
mm-hmm.
Then becomes another issue.
Horse is a different issue. It's a domestic animal and not a wildlife species.
Or dog.
And that's...
And then I guess, Mr. Torrance, that would be handled under the emergency procedures given under this bill, which would be the one that Representative Newman talked about on page 2.
Yes, for a person who performs euthanasia of an animal in the course and scope of the person's employment while employed by an agency that has a permit. And page 2, line 25, a person who provides care without remuneration to an injured or ill animal that reasonably appears to the person to be in need of aid. Those would protect them as far as the veterinary board is concerned under Good Samaritanism. But I can't speak for fish and game. I don't know that answer.
Just as a practical matter, my expectation is that if the practical working of this, if somebody had a problem with that, let's just say it was a horse, and you took care of that horse for those reasons, but the owner of the horse didn't think you did a very good job at it, then they would come to you and say before the court that this person is practicing veterinary medicine. And then the court looks at this language quite differently than the board would look at the language. And I think that's one of the reasons why we have to continually ask these questions how does this work? Because in personal disputes between even what both people might think are good actions, of course, going to have to decide. So I think it's important for us to nail these things down. So the euthanasia is within the scope of employment, period. And the care of an animal is not euthanasia. And so that's, we have to anticipate these things if somebody's going to use this to defend the veterinary operation to be legitimate and legal, and then not to hold it against people who have duties to do that are in the normal scope of life. You know, so how do we get there? Further questions? Representative Cortula.
How are you going to go about deciding what standards are commonly performed on farm or domestic animals? I mean, let's say you get somebody who does bring in a farmer and say they're practicing veterinary medicine. What? How are you going to set those standards?
Dr. Torrance, through the chair, standards of care, at least medically speaking, are decided based upon an area in which the care has taken place. And a standard of care, let's say, for a typical farm operation would be determined by the acts and practices that occur on that particular type of farm in a particular area.
So, I'm back.
Representative Cortula, yes.
So, are you going to have to go, let's say you're Abbott Delta, are you going to go get the farmers at Delta to come in and testify to you what those practices are?
This is Dr. Torrance, through the chair. If that were the case, I don't think that's ever come up before, and I wouldn't anticipate it. I think that they would be covered under page 3, line 15, a person or what we'd like to say agent or designee of a person who, with or without compensation, treats only animals belonging to that person unless ownership is transferred for the purpose of avoiding this chapter. Under that, too, alluding back to euthanasia, euthanasia could be and probably would be considered end care of an animal. And then let's see, page 5, line 20, standard practices commonly performed on a farm or domestic animals in the course of routine farming or animal husbandry.
Okay. Well, I think just for the beginning of this discussion, I'd be willing to entertain an amendment on page 3, line 14, and there was two different words used that may fit here. One would be designee and one would be agent after employee, or instead of employee, I should say.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Harris?
Follow your lead. I'd like to offer an amendment.
That'll be amendment number 1.
Offer amendment number 1. And it's conceptual, and it'll not be written down, but I'll just say it. On line 14, it would read a person or, in place of employee, agent of a person. Period.
Everybody understand where it's at? Any objection?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll go ahead and take that amendment. Representative Cortula.
Could I have, I don't know if we have anyone who can answer this question, but does agent cover a family member here? Because, I mean, on the farm, the kids are often out there. I don't know if they're considered agents or not. But as I'm reading it, I don't know if we need to add in family member or not.
If I may. Dr. Torrance, perhaps we could adjust that to say a person, agent, or employee of a person. Would that cover more ground?
Well, I think...
Or the word designee.
Mr. Torrance and Representative Cortula, I think agent represents the designee. So I think whoever is under the authority of a person at that point would be... And I think you could there's other issues that could come up in that, but at least under this one, it's assumed as an individual or the designee of an individual. But you can see the kind of problem the lawyers in this room can think of all kinds of scenarios. So I have Representative Johnson and then Representative Samuels.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On line 2, on page 2, line 27, it's basically a veterinarian who's licensed in another state. Do we have reciprocity with other states?
Well, let's go back to the amendment first.
I'm sorry.
Did we have an objection to the amendment?
No.
So without an objection, we'll keep that, and it'll be still open for discussion, obviously. I'm sorry.
I
just wanted to make sure we dispose of that first.
And On that point of the amendment, then? On the point of the amendment, Mr. Chairman, I assume that if it's conceptual amendment, if the word designee fits better into the drafting, the drafters can speak to it.
Is that okay with the maker of the amendment?
I don't need it.
I think we have that being typed into the minutes. Representative Curtula.
Could I also, along the same lines, and ask to be sure that family members fit in here?
Yeah. Well, that'd be a definitional issue. So designee of that person could include, but not exclusively, two family members, I would think.
No, that's right.
Okay, that's on the record, so.
Mr. Chairman, it would be my intent that whatever word we use reflects the will of the owner or the or whatever it's called of the animal that we're talking about.
That's why I thought agent worked well, but I think legislative drafting can help us on that. And before this goes to the floor, or even maybe even before this goes out of committee, I see other questions arising yet. So we'll put that with the rest. Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Torrance has a comment on the word agent.
Okay.
Dr. Torrance, to the chair. The word agent is the word that most commonly shows up in other veterinary laws and that I've seen in the past.
Okay. Well, we'll let it set there with that caveat in the testimony. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A new subject, page 2, line 27. This is a new section in the exemption. Do we have reciprocity now, and is there anything keeping a veterinarian from just coming in and hanging a shingle out? Because of what this says, a vet who's licensed in another state or country, or person whose expertise is exempt from all of this stuff here. So would that allow them to just come and hang a shingle out and start a business without going through the process? I mean, it seems to me like we've just created a reciprocity with very little oversight by the state by having this in here.
For my answer first, it has to be within consultation of a veterinary license within the state. So, and if I'm wrong, Mr. Torrance.
Dr. Torrance, through the chair, we do have reciprocity with other states, but that reciprocity only counts toward the ease of getting a license in the state. If another veterinarian comes into Alaska and practices veterinary medicine in Alaska, he does so without a license, and that is illegal. What this is for, this pertains a lot to the advances in medicine with telemedicine and so forth. Right now, there's nothing to speak of that relationship between a veterinarian in this state and someone who's an expert, say, in Washington State. And so the person ultimately responsible for any part of that consultation would be the Alaska license staff.
Thank you, Chairman.
Members of the committee, and I actually forgot to say how many members were present here. So just for those, since I've been correcting everybody else, Representative Curtula, Representative Johnson, and one of our more silent members, Representative Faircloth, Chair Coghill, Representative Samuels, and Representative Harris. Is that enough answers for the committee?
For what? You want to try to move it?
I have an amendment. Another amendment.
You have too.
Okay. Here's what my intention is to do then, because we are under a huge time crunch. We have people who have made commitments that start at 6 o'clock. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to hold this over, and I'd ask those who have other questions and amendments to bring them in writing. We'll bring it before the committee. I've noticed another committee meeting. Did we cancel that, Chief of Staff Reneva?
Or
Okay, well, we haven't noticed for Monday, I think. So my intention is to answer the questions and move the bill along in consultation with the committee and the bill sponsor. So thank you, Dr. Torrance, for showing up, and thanks for all those who came to observe this interesting process. And with that, we're going to adjourn, holding over House Bill 297.